Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 34 of the Audio Briefings. It's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome. Thanks for joining us again. Before I introduce our awesome guest today, I just wanted to tell you about two quick things that we added on the website this week. I'm excited about both of them. One is a Cardinal Aviation store. So we've got some awesome hoodies, t-shirts, and hats there for you to check out, as well as there's a support the podcast page, and that's also built into the store there. It's also on its own. There's buttons on the podcast website, www.cardinalaviation.ca/podcast, and there's now a new way in there if you want to help support the podcast by either, you know, buying us a coffee or becoming a monthly or yearly subscriber. There's some really neat benefits to each and perks for becoming a supporter of this podcast. So I encourage you to go over to the website, check that out, cardinalaviation.ca/podcast, and help us help you, especially if you feel like you've been getting some sort of benefit out of the podcast that we've been doing. If we've been helping you transform the way you fly, making you safer, making you more comfortable, or just making you think about some things that maybe might have slipped to the back of the mind there since you got your license. But we love doing this. Like most things flying, and most commercial pilots shouldn't say this, but we would honestly just do it for free because we love it so much. But if you want to say thanks, there's two ways you can do it, with either some clothes or go ahead and you can support us there on the website. All right, back to why you guys are all really here is Captain Doug Morris. And Captain Doug is with us today. The only time you'll really hear from Captain Doug is if you're in an Air Canada ground school or you're in the back of a 787 when he's making his welcome aboard announcement. But you will have read all about him or read from him, as he is a airline pilot, meteorologist, and author. He's written 4 books on aviation weather and having a career in aviation. And if you have ever been on an Air Canada flight and flipped back to the in-flight magazine, the En Route magazine, you will see his column that he's been writing for 22 and a half years, called Taking Off with Captain Doug. And in that, he takes some complicated aviation topics and really, and in a way only he could, for lack of better terms, dumbs it down so that only, or even the layman, you know, traveler with no aviation background can understand everything from turbulence to the jet streams to how pressurization works. Or I think a couple episodes ago was about aircraft speed and Mach. And I wish I would have had him as my ground school instructor, because I think things might have progressed a little bit faster with simple explanations. So without any further delay, we're going to cut straight to my conversation with Doug. And when you're all done listening, go check out the website and see what there is there for you, how you can help us help you. And also be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Spotify or Apple. All right, here it is, Captain Doug. I'm here with Captain Doug Morris of Air Canada. And I'm super excited to talk to him because he doesn't know it yet, but somebody I've followed for a long time, and it was pretty I don't know, I was honored to receive an email from him that he had listened to one of these podcasts and wanted to talk weather. So he had contacted me after listening to the episode about block altitudes and deviations. So the fact that he listened to that meant a lot to me. And there's two things I need to admit, and it's every time I pick up a copy of Flying Magazine, the first place I go is what I learned about flying from that, and I think we all do that. And every time I get on an Air Canada flight, the first place I go, I get my stuff put away in the overhead or underneath the seat, and I put on my seatbelt and I grab En Route and I go right to the back. And usually my reference point is the page that has the route map and all the fleet information. And then I usually go back a few pages from that and I go looking straight for the Takeoff with Captain Doug column, which Doug writes every issue there. So yeah, welcome.
Thanks, Ryan. And geez, sounds like I have a pretty good fan.
Yeah. So Doug, you are an author, a meteorologist, you're an Air Canada instructor, and a 787 captain.
That's right. Dreamliner. It just came in from Paris yesterday.
Awesome. And with passengers or just cargo?
This time it was passengers.
Awesome.
But I've been flying a lot of cargo flights.
And you're fairly recent on the 87, right? Because by following your column, you were an Airbus guy for a long time.
Yeah, I had 22 years of Airbus, and then I went over to the Boeing, the dark side, the other side. I've been on the airplane for about 2.5 years now.
Okay.
So far, so good.
Excellent. And so, I mean, author, meteorologist, Air Canada pilot, I mean, those are three very different things. So do you want to maybe take me through in what order they happened and how you ended up on each?
Well, you know, I always aspired to be a pilot, but back in the late 80s, it wasn't happening. So I went back to university, became a meteorologist, a certified meteorologist. I worked for Environment Canada for 3 years, and then I saw that the aviation world was turning around. Things were looking really good, so it was time to jump. And I threw in the weather map and became a pilot. Yeah.
Did you have your pilot's license when you went to become a meteorologist?
I did. I actually had my commercial fixed wing, which is really good. They were really impressed that there was actually a meteorologist who knew a little bit about flying. So it gave me a little bit more roundness than a lot of the other candidates.
And I guess meteorology, when you're studying meteorology, it's not just as it applies to flying. You're looking at all the other sides as well.
Absolutely. There was a lot of high-tech meteorology, a lot of calculus involved. A lot of people don't realize what is needed to be a certified meteorologist here in Canada. You need at least 5 years post-secondary.
Really?
So you need a lot of qualifications to screw up the weather.
Okay. Well, and yeah, you still can't get the forecast right, but hey, whatever.
That's right. Don't blame on me.
No. So, so you did the meteorology thing, and then it was a good time to get into the industry. So did you get from, so you went commercial fixed wing, then you became a meteorologist, did that for a while. Then it was a good time to get into the industry. So what was your kind of journey stepping stone from meteorologist with a commercial license to Air Canada?
So I learned to fly mostly in the East Coast. I'm a Haligonian Maritimer. So I got on with the Eastern Flying Service, flying part-time. I didn't want to throw in the weather towel completely, so they let me fly a Navajo part-time. Then I got on the Merlin, and I said, this is it. I'm throwing in the weather map forever, and I became a pilot with them for 2 years. And then Air Atlantic, flying Dash 8s in the 146 out of Halifax. Mm-hmm. And then I did the wing walk thing to Air Nova, which was my ticket into Air Canada. And I've been with Air Canada just over 24 years now.
Good for you. So you got the licenses and then waited for the right time to get in rather than.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. And then
jump when you can.
And then, so in that, so meteorologist, then now you're flying regionals and then for Big Red, and then some books start appearing. How did that happen?
You know, I've been writing for En Route since I was a cruise pilot on the 340 with Air Canada, and I submitted a proposal to them, said, hey, would you like some aviation weather-related articles? And they brought me on. My first article was called Why the Bumps Explain Turbulence. The second one was on jet streams. And then they asked me, and I asked them, and we've been stringing each other along for the last 22 and a half years. And I keep waiting for that email saying, Dear Doug, that's enough. Although lately we've been hitting some turbulence. En Route magazine right now is not in the airplanes, but hopefully it's going to be coming back within a month. But because I amassed so many articles, I wrote a book in 2007 called From the Flight Deck. Did really well. Sold about 15,000 copies.
I'm one of them. I've got that copy in the hangar. So.
And then around 2015, I said, okay, there's a void here as far as weather books in Canada. The only weather book that most pilots will recognize is the Air Command Weather Manual. That book was written 4 decades ago, and yet we're still adhering to that book. That was written pre-internet, but yet all the exams are predicated on that book. I've approached Transport Canada saying, hey, based on safety alone, why don't you acknowledge my book? And their answer was, it's not government published, so they can't acknowledge it. Which is a pity.
So, which is interesting. So, I mean, the Air Command Weather Manual, I mean, that's where I learned my meteorology in school when I got my licenses in the late 90s, early 2000s, along with the Instrument Procedures Manual, which I flipped
there
through every day, and I'd say half of it is completely irrelevant now. But, I mean, the weather hasn't changed in 40 years.
Absolutely.
So what has changed that makes your book, which is Canadian Aviation Weather, what is it that makes your book more relevant than the Air Command Weather Manual?
Well, for one thing, the Air Command Weather Manual is just strictly theory. And you know what? They did a fantastic job, and the theory still adheres to today. However, they don't talk about METARs or TAFs or GFAs or any of the forecasts or anything like that. So it's half the book. But again, the theory part, top-notch. But my book, Canadian Aviation Weather. It's just under 300 pages, 32 chapters. I even talk about space weather and volcanic ash. I mean, the Air Command manual doesn't talk about anything like that.
Yeah, and then you wrote a, so there's a volume one and a volume two of Canadian Aviation Weather.
Correct. We're on the second edition of Canadian Aviation Weather. And then I co-authored with a meteorologist first, pilot second in the United States called Scott Denstedt. He is a weather guru down there. And we co-authored the book Pilot Weather from Solo to the Airlines. And it was on fire there until pre-COVID. And now, but it's starting to come around again. We're starting to see sales come up. And I'm starting to see sales come up in Canadian Aviation Weather.
And then, so Pilot Weather from Solo to Airlines was specifically geared more towards the American pilot.
Correct. And everyone's saying, hey, what are you talking about? Is there a difference between Canadian weather and a pilot and American weather? There is. Just look at the METARs. There's a lot of differences. Like, for example, in the States, they don't include cloud groups. But in Canada, we do. So there's a whole bunch of little variations. We call it a trowel here in Canada, an occluded front, but in the States they call it an occluded front.
So who's more dialed in when it comes to weather publishing and forecasting, Canada or the U.S.?
Well, you know what? The Americans, they have a lot of different takes. For example, they only claim there's two jet streams. Here in Canada, we claim there's four jet streams. So it's I don't know who's right or who's wrong, but I try to take all of it in and give everyone a perspective of what the Canadians think and what the Americans think.
Awesome. And do you, I don't know the answer to this. Do you do any, whether seminars or speaking at flight schools or aviation events?
I do. I've been talking at COPA. I've been talking to aviation schools, but that's kind of dropped off. Everything is just up in the air right now. And I would love to talk to anyone that wants to talk about weather. Always been open about that.
What's your favorite weather topic?
My favorite weather topic, as far as aviation or...
Yeah.
I love still talking or describing how to read a METAR from head to toe. That's a meat and potato type thing for any pilot. And it's amazing how many pilots can't read a METAR from head to toe. So I even, when I've been teaching all the initial new hires at Air Canada, I've got about 130 courses under my belt, and I'm shocked or amazed, just the typical weather IQ for, a fairly senior or well-advanced pilot.
I think pilot and controller standpoint, my favorite abbreviation in a METAR is Froin.
Froin, frost on indicator. Yeah, and I talk about that. Yes.
That's our favorite one to ask people. Yeah. And we can usually stump about 80% of people with that one.
In fact, when I was doing my research for the book, I went to the Toronto Pearson Weather Office, and that day, our first Dreamliner arrived. And the Dreamliner, as you know, was made of composite. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to have to get a new indicator, not just aluminum indicator, but a composite indicator for the Froin.
That's awesome. So I was going to get into politics, and I want to be careful with the airline thing.
Yes,
but you said you've got 100 and something courses under your belt with new hires.
About 120, 130. Yep.
So a lot has changed in the last 5-10 years.
Yes.
And I know when I got my commercial back in 2004, you needed 2,000 hours to sniff the inside of a Navajo. And we've talked about this here before. And watching people that I've seen come into the industry the last 5-10 years, it's been very fast progression from license to Air Canada. Like, I've seen people get a commercial license and they're sitting right seat at Air Canada 3 years later.
Yes.
Back then it was a 10-year thing, and you'd go up north and you'd get this experience in, remote areas and kind of crappy conditions. What have, for what you can say, and if you can't say it, just say
sure.
What have you seen be the difference in these courses coming through in the 120 courses as that the industry changed from, pilots really having to claw their way into the airlines really needing people and taking who they could get in terms of background knowledge when it comes to weather, pilot decision-making and stuff like that?
I walk into the class, I look at the class, and I go, wow, these kids are still, I call them kids, but the new hires, they're still top-notch. We are still getting the cream of the cream. So we didn't whittle down to the bottom yet. And I was shocked at how great a candidates Air Canada was getting. And now I'm flying with people, new hire course, and their first course is the right seat of the 787. And I look over at them and go, wow, they make it look so easy.
Yeah.
So they are top notch. I know other airlines, they're kind of scrambling for others, but right now, or until pre-COVID, we were getting some top notch candidates.
And what, sorry, now the controller type question for you. So whether it's Air Canada, this isn't specific to Air Canada, but maybe you can shed a little bit of light for the people on the other side of the radio that listen to this. Sometimes we'll offer, you know, a reroute to you, or let's say there's a reduced visibility you need to hold for a while. And more often it seems that the pilots say, okay, well, you know what, just give us a few minutes. We got to call dispatch.
Yeah.
What's happening in that conversation between the aircraft and dispatch when it comes to decision-making on reroutes, on alternates and stuff like that while you're in the air?
Okay. Actually, we sort of been briefed that we should deny direct routes just because our flight planning is so sophisticated that we've got it figured out, we think, that we're going to save the fuel and the time by our own programming. So when you offer a reroute, that might not necessarily be the cheapest way or the fastest way of going. So we don't not necessarily talking to dispatch. Maybe the long directs, yes. But generally speaking, we do have a few programs that's saying, okay, this is what we suggest and stick to the script. And that's what I tell you, air traffic controllers. We would like to stick to the script.
Excellent. And are you able to actually speak with dispatch when you're in the air when it comes time to like alternate changes and weather?
Yes, we can. And in fact, if I'm flying over to Paris a few nights ago, and if we got a reroute, we would have to send that new route to dispatch. And they would actually send part of the flight plan into the flight deck. So we get new numbers and stuff like that as far as fuel burns and times.
And as a heavy captain and meteorologist, are you not Air Canada dispatch's worst nightmare? Like you know too much?
I do like to challenge them, but you know, they know a lot of weather. In fact, I think they know more weather than pilots.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't doubt it. Excellent. So we mentioned COVID and we talked about how the industry has changed. What would you say to, I mean, pilots that, you know, bright eyed, you know, that's the best time to get into aviation? I mean, what we were saying, not necessarily for Air Canada, but in general to become a commercial pilot. 6 months ago, we were saying a license and a pulse and you'll find a job. And now all of that has been thrown out the window with COVID and it's brought the industry to its knees. So the pilot that had big dreams and big hopes and big opportunities 6 months ago that's now sitting on the sidelines, like what would you say to them with your years of experience?
Well, Ryan, I just wrote another book, book number four, and that was predicated on pre-COVID. And the book comes out in January, but now I'm going to have to COVIDize it. I praise the aviation world to the nth degree. I thought it was the best thing going. I still do. I think it's the best gig out there. Basically, you don't get in the stock market when the stocks are high. So, and I mentor a lot of people over the years. And I know a young fellow now, he's going through the Waterloo program. He's on second year, but I tell his father, keep at it. He's going to come out and with his 4-year degree and qualifications, and I think the time would be ripe. A lot of pilots now have to think it's not just Canada. You might have to go elsewhere for a while, maybe a few years. They're hiring all around the world. I get emails all the time still looking to hire me.
Mm-hmm. I know there's a few people that have struggled with that as well. I have a very close friend who was a captain on a Boeing aircraft in Canada, and that company went out of business. And they had 57s. And when that happened, he ended up going overseas to the Middle East to fly. And he's now spent 10 years over there. He's a 777 captain over there. Yes. And he would like to come home, but with the North American industry being so seniority based, it becomes a challenge sometimes if you go overseas and you know, he's got however many tens of thousands of hours and command time on the triple. But if you were to come back to Canada and apply to any airline, he's going to end up as a bottom of the heap.
Absolutely. You know. He does. And in fact, my last few new hire courses, we had guys from Emirates. It had Cathay Pacific, all starting at the very bottom. You know, that some of them had 15,000 hours plus command time, but sadly they have to start right at the bottom.
That's gotta
like
be
number 4,400.
That's gotta be tough.
It is tough, but you know what? They're still gleaming, big smile in the classroom, saying, "I'm glad to be here."
Good, excellent. Okay, well, so we talked your book. I want to ask you a question about your column in En Route. So, Take Off with Captain Duck. How? I mean, you've been doing that column for, what did you say, 20 years?
22 and a half years. Yeah.
And you haven't run out of material. Like, have you repeated any content?
I have, you know, around 5 or 6 years into it, I can start repeating it. But everyone asks me the same question, you know, how do you come up with the topics? But when you think about how advanced aviation is, I mean, it requires 55 to 60 departments just to get an airline and airborne. Then when you throw in the topic of weather, I can go on for years.
Yeah. I was at a candidate kind of a socially distant barbecue down the street last night. And obviously when one of us ends up at a function like that, usually there comes up a question about airplanes, and somebody was talking about bird strikes.
Okay.
And so I ended up pulling up my phone and grabbing that YouTube video of them firing the frozen turkey into the engine while they're certifying the engine.
That's right.
And showing them basically how the cowl is meant to contain a catastrophic engine failure. And we got into all that, and they thought it was fascinating. So what I wanted to ask you was, how do you take these complex topics and break them down? And I'm shocked how you can get such clarity in what looks like sometimes 200 words.
You're right. And I am, word limited. And I also like to point out that what I write and what goes in the magazine could be two different things. I have to go through about 8 to 10 editors. It's amazing who oversees that column, just for obvious reasons. But I think I have a pretty good talent of dumbing things down. And that's why I took, aviation meteorology in my book. And I think a lot of guys should be able to grasp it pretty easy.
And is your meteorology book kind of, it takes complicated talk? Like, I haven't seen the meteorology book, so does it kind of dumb it down as well?
Absolutely, it does. In fact, one of the biggest questions I ask for all the new hires in any course I teach, I said that I ask, if the winds are from the east, which way is the low pressure system going?
And wait.
Yeah, see if you can figure this one out.
If the winds are from the east, I'm going to put my back to it.
Okay,
and that's what my left. So the low is going to be to the south. I know that much.
Very good. So yeah, everyone goes into the Dubai Bayo's live. My wind's to the back. The low pressure's off to my left. However, that's not where it's going. And the answer is, and we all know the weather moves from west to east generally in Canada, in the United States. The answer is the surface winds have nothing to do with it. We have to go up top. We have to go aloft at 18,000 feet, 500 millibars. That is where all the weather is steered for the surface. So that's what I talk about, upper air features and stuff like that, which a private pilot might not appreciate. But once you get in more advanced meteorology, it's something you should know.
It's funny. I was talking to a client the other day while we were flying, and I had to admit, I said, look, I did my private license, commercial license, and flew Navajos and Twin Otters and all this. And it wasn't until I had about 2,500 hours and was operating in flight levels that I ever truly understood the difference between indicated airspeed and true airspeed.
Because it
just didn't matter.
It's huge. Right? Yeah, it's huge up at altitude.
So sometimes you need that exposure and explaining that even to new controllers, because most controllers aren't pilots either. Just how things change. It's you have to be able to dumb it down a little bit. So cool. Okay, I got a couple. I've never done this before. I listened to this other podcast called Pilot to Pilot, and I don't usually do a lot of interviews, but he does this kind of like the speed round.
Here we go.
No, it's simple. I got a couple of things. It's based on your history.
Okay.
And it's weather related. So what airport in the Air Canada network has the most consistently challenging weather conditions for you with your kind of?
St. John's, Newfoundland.
Really?
It's the armpit of the world as far as weather, but challenging. Yes, St. John's. Everyone at Air Canada, or most Canadian pilots that travel around the Canada, will have a Torbay story. In fact, that's what I asked in the new hire course. How many people in this class have a Torbay story?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the most challenging.
I've heard it's the only place where you can have a 30 knot wind and still be RVR 600.
Absolutely. And everyone's and with freezing drizzle.
Yeah. Okay. Airbus or Boeing?
Airbus. I hate to say it. 22 years of Airbus. I still think Airbus beats out Boeing, especially in the vertical navigation part. I know I shouldn't be saying that. I think the Dreamliner is a beautiful airplane. Passengers absolutely love the airplane. The altitude's a lot lower. The air is better and all that sort of stuff. But I still think Airbus kicks butt.
Are you involved in GA at all still, or is it strictly work flying?
A little bit. I would love to do more with COPA and stuff like that. But they seem to close the doors in the weather department.
Yeah. Okay. And then of all the airplanes, this will be the last one, of all the airplanes you've ever flown from like your first introductory flight all the way to the Dreamliner, if you had to pick one to fly every day for the rest of your life, which one would it be?
Airbus 330. Simple as that. It's still a nice airplane.
Do you want to
still sexy?
Do you want to just for fun? And I've heard this. I mean, I used to fly corporately with a guy who was a X330 guy, and I'd hear this every, just, you know, it's one of these things I think all Airbus 330 pilots love to talk about, how when you land an Airbus 330, it's actually two landings.
That's right. Yeah. So you touch down, and then you got to let the nose wheel down real quick, gently, and it's basically touchdown. So you flared it for the touchdown, then you had to flare for the nose.
And there's something to do with the on the mains, right? Like you touch down touchdown, then you have to flare a second time, then touchdown, and then the nose. It's like three landings.
That's
in one.
It. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah. The 340 was more like that because it hit the center bogey.
Do you want to? And this will be your final challenge. You got to do a takeoff with Captain Doug, dumb it down explanation on landing a 330.
Okay. Oh. How about the 787 with the HUD?
Okay, or that. Sure, you pick.
Okay, landing the 787 with the HUD, 50, you get to book the 50-foot call, and then you start to check the rate of descent. Then you get the 30-foot call. You're checking it a little bit more, and then you're looking for the radio altitude readouts. And at 10 feet, you just hold your breath and start flaring ever so slightly, and you should be able to put it on very nicely thereafter.
Is the what do I want to call it? Radar altitude countdown
on the HUD
on the 787. Does it call you nasty names like the Airbus at the end, or is it just a straight number countdown?
No, as far as retired, no, yeah. No retired, no.
So it's just a 10, and then you're pulling the power back on the 87.
That's it. Yeah, you're just watching the altitude go by feet, and you can put it on really nice. It's a beautiful airplane that way. In fact, it has a lot of very nice features. But again, if you ask me, and if Air Canada or the company I fly for with the maple leaf emblazoned on the tail said, we're going to get Airbus 350s, I would be on the first course.
Excellent. And the back to the 87, just in your experience now, having had tens of thousands of hours in big metal tubes, right. Is the change in pressurization on the 87 that lowers the cabin altitude? Do you really feel the difference working on the airplane day in, day out?
Yes. The pilots are saying the same thing, and the flight attendants, they feel more refreshed after they land in destination. You know, we're not flying at 8,000 feet. We're flying at 6,000 feet. Plus we're putting humidity in the air. The airplane's quiet. Again, that's why the passengers absolutely love the 787.
Amazing. Okay, cool. I'll stop grilling you. We'll just circle back to your books.
Yes.
So if somebody wanted to pick up a copy of Canadian Aviation Weather or Pilot Weather from Solo to Airlines or from the Flight Deck, where would they get it? And maybe you can just summarize from the Flight Deck because it's not a meteorology one.
No, and that book was written 2007, and that's why I was mentioning I've written book number four, and book number four is coming out in January, and that's a sequel to From the Flight Deck.
What's it called?
We're still working on that. It's going to be sort of like Keep the Blue Side Up or Take Off with Captain Doug, something like that. It'll be coming out in January. But Canadian Aviation Weather and Pilot Weather, it's selling in all the aviation bookstores in Canada. Of course, I do have two websites that's available. Just Google Canadian Aviation Weather or Pilot Weather. It's going to come up. It's selling on Amazon. And if you email me personally, I'll send a book signed.
Awesome. Okay, well, yeah. I'll put a link to your website on the show notes on the Cardinal Aviation website. Great. I wanted to really thank you for your time. It's an honor to speak with you. I've only ever, you know, read your words. And now when I read them next time, it'll be extra special there. So I really appreciate your time, Doug. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
I would like to congratulate you on your director's award with COPA.
Oh, thank you.
And I'll also like to add that NAV Canada does a top-notch job.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Doug.
Yeah. All the best.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did, and actually getting to hear the voice behind the man who is typically only heard in text unless he's welcoming you on board his 787 flight to wherever they may be going for the day. It's so great to talk to somebody with such vast industry experience, and also somebody that's got just a well-rounded knowledge of something other than flying. I mean, to be a meteorologist, to be an author and an airline pilot, I mean, that's a pretty impressive resume. And it just goes to show that in aviation, many of us do have multiple passions, and it's really, really neat when we can marry them together and have them really improve our professional ability and also have an avenue to communicate and pass on a lot of the lessons that have been learned, be it through books, columns in a magazine, podcasts, online, whatever it may be. So if you have a passion for something, share it with others. I mean, that's the only way we all get to learn, and it's something that we try to bring to you through this podcast, and we thank you for listening. Like we said at the beginning, please subscribe to this podcast. A couple of things coming up. I'm working on some Cardinal Aviation t-shirts and hoodies. I'm going to have them on our website here shortly. I like making that kind of stuff. It's kind of fun for the community, and a way that we can unite as listeners, as pilots, under the idea that we do want to transform the way we fly, and we do all want to continuously improve and be as proficient and as professional as possible. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, visit us online, www.cardinalaviation.ca. Been doing lots of interesting flying in the last couple weeks. We share it on our Instagram. There's information about our coaches and the services that we provide on the website. And we'd love to hear from you. Email address info@cardinalaviation.ca. And until next time, fly safely, never stop learning.